later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus. Next week, we'll talk with environmental writer Jimmy Tobias about the aftermath of the Malheur occupation in the broader and in some ways more dangerous context of anti-conservation efforts on Capitol Hill and in right-wing state legislatures. My engineer is Kate Welch. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We'll go out with some music by Joni Mitchell. Thanks for listening.
Your little light shine. Let your little light shine. Shine on Vegas and Wall Street.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and it is just 11 o'clock a.m. Coming up next, 11:30, is Health and Healthcare Forum host Roberta Hall, who covers a recent gathering of health and housing experts on the social determinants of health. And coming up next at 11, or 11 in a couple of minutes, is Health Watch host Ellen Goldsmith speaking with Wolfram Alderson, the founding executive director of the Institute for Responsible Nutrition, about sugar, the bitter truth. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Clinton Street 3rd Annual Mardi Gras Festival, Tuesday, February 9th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. This annual celebration features the Les Blyke Mardi Gras films Dry Wood and Always for Pleasure, as well as food, costumes, music, and more. Again, that's the 3rd Annual Mardi Gras Fat Tuesday celebration, February 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Love somehow. I'm through playing with fire.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Clinton Street 3rd Annual Mardi Gras Festival, Tuesday, February 9th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. This annual celebration features the Les Blyke Mardi Gras films Dry Wood and Always for Pleasure, as well as food, costumes, music, and more. Again, that's the 3rd Annual Mardi Gras Fat Tuesday celebration, February 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Love somehow. I'm through playing with fire.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Clinton Street 3rd Annual Mardi Gras Festival, Tuesday, February 9th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. This annual celebration features the Les Blyke Mardi Gras films Dry Wood and Always for Pleasure, as well as food, costumes, music, and more. Again, that's the 3rd Annual Mardi Gras Fat Tuesday celebration, February 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Love somehow. I'm through playing with fire.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Setup, a play that takes place in Hell's Kitchen during the late 1920s. It focuses on a black boxer, an eminent champion, whose return to the ring is secretly set up for defeat. The Setup runs from February 12th through March 5th at the Shaking the Tree Theater, 823 Southeast Grant Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I am Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, your host today. There's a lot in the news about sugar and its negative impact on our health. In early January of this year, the FDA issued dietary recommendations to cut our daily intake of added sugar to just 10% of the calories consumed in our daily diet. The conversation about sugar has been ongoing and was brought to new heights when Dr. Robert Lustig, a pediatric neuroendocrinologist at the University of California in San Francisco, delivered a stinging indictment about the high intake of sugar and its impact on the health of children and society in a 2009 talk entitled Sugar, the Bitter Truth, which was viewed on YouTube by over 6 million viewers. Since then, he co-founded the Institute for Responsible Nutrition in San Francisco, which is committed to a world where improving public health comes before any individual's or organization's financial gain or personal benefit. Today, I'm happy to be speaking with Wolfram Alderson, who is the founding executive director of the Institute for Responsible Nutrition and is now its chief operating officer. He's a lifetime champion of human and environmental health. Wolfram works closely with Dr. Robert Lustig and the team at the Institute for Responsible Nutrition to improve global health, cut sugar consumption, and encourage people to eat real food. Wolfram Alderson, welcome to Health Watch.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning. I thought we could start by you just telling our listeners a little bit about the Institute for Responsible Nutrition and what it's doing, what its mission is.
Thank you. The Institute for Responsible Nutrition is a nonprofit organization founded in 2013, and we work with leading scientists and organizations to bring greater transparency to how food is processed and marketed, and really to change the conversation about what's going on. As you know or may not know, we're in the midst of a major epidemic. Nearly 50% of adults living in the U.S. have diabetes or prediabetes, and the numbers are stacking up. I think this is costing us around $245 billion, the most recent estimate, and about 71,000 persons die annually due to complications from diabetes. So this is a really serious issue that we're trying to address by, again, trying to get to some of the root causes and changing the conversations, the topics that have been sort of continuing to drive the epidemic, such as this is about obesity or this is about, calories in, calories out. We just need to exercise more and eat less, things like that that are really not true and undermining our efforts to make a difference.
So how are you changing the conversation? What kinds of initiatives are you involved in or promoting out there in the world to make a difference?
Well, for example, debunking myths, the whole energy balance hypothesis, which has been promulgated by the processed food industry, is used widely as an explanation of why we're here. In other words, the reason we're here is because we eat too much and we don't exercise enough. And basically that's based on the idea that all calories are the same. So if you have calories from a sugary beverage or calories from almonds, it's all the same calorie as a calorie. But we do quite a bit of education around the fact that that's a myth and explain what really happens in the body, as opposed to calories, which is essentially a measurement of energy that's taken in a device called a bomb calorimeter, which doesn't look anything like the human body.
What is a bomb calorimeter?
Well, it actually kind of looks like a bomb. It looks like a small oven with a bunch of wires and devices attached to it, and essentially they put food into the oven and heat it up to a certain temperature. It's actually designed to raise the temperature of water a certain number of degrees. Essentially, you burn stuff up in a little oven, and you get an energy measurement. But as you know, the human body is not an oven, and using the calorie and just looking at energy is missing a lot of the parts of the equation, such as fiber, nutrients, actual food values, as opposed to just the energy. Energy is certainly part of the equation, but unfortunately, marketers use science and twist it to make us think it's something that it isn't.
So everyone out there goes to the supermarket and they walk down the aisles and, in the middle of the supermarket where all the processed food is, some of it better than others, and they read these food labels, right? And and a lot of people look at how many calories are in what they're going to consume. So you go and you get an energy bar, or you look at a quote healthy breakfast bar with fruit and grain or whatever, or you go to the yogurt section, or you go to any other section. So what you're saying is that when you look at calories of anything with, I would assume, at higher degrees of added sugar, it's actually not the same thing as calories from a whole food that you're going to buy.
That's right. If you are actually on a real food, whole food diet, you would not have to count calories in most cases unless you have a very specific type of illness. But most of us would not have to count calories if we focused on real food. Unfortunately, if it has a label, it's a warning label. And going into Whole Foods or to Trader Joe's or even health food shops doesn't mean you're safe. I think the safest place to shop is at your farmer's market or your CSA. The issue is that the calories from processed food, and especially processed foods with sugar, and basically sugar is the leading marker for processed food, and it's in 75% of our food supply at this point. Sugar is basically composed of two pieces, glucose and fructose. And glucose is interesting. It's processed by virtually every cell in your body. And, of course, you can get natural glucose from many foods. But really, fructose is the bad boy in the equation. And when it's extracted and processed and used in so many foods, what happens is that our liver and other organs are overloaded. And unfortunately, fructose is processed 100% in the liver, and the liver is right at the center of this pandemic I mentioned, with 50% of adults living in the U.S. having diabetes or prediabetes. Non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is the fastest-growing chronic disease on Earth. And basically, fructose targets our liver, especially in the quantities that we're getting, and it basically turns it to, if you ever heard of foie gras, it's exactly the same thing that we're doing to our own livers.
Oh my gosh, that's horrible.
Exact same thing.
So you're saying that, but this fatty liver disease is a kind of a hidden disease, isn't it?
That's right. This is part of the one of the other big myths, that it's about obesity. It's really easy for processed food marketers to point at people who are overweight as being where the problem is. But when you actually look at what science says that there's basically two populations in the U.S. One is the obese population, and in fact, 80% of the obese population has some form of metabolic disease, and that's about 57 million people. Then you have the non-obese population, and actually 40% of the non-obese population have metabolic disease, and that's 67 million people. So there's actually more sick, thin people than there are people who are obese. And part of the reason is just what you said. You don't see your liver getting fat. In a sense, you're almost blessed if your body manifests fat, like visceral fat or fat you can see around your belly or your love handles, whatever you want to call those, because your body is giving you some external messages. But unfortunately, there are many thin people, as I mentioned, 67 million, who have some form of metabolic disease, and most of them don't know it because we've been fed this myth that the problem is about obesity when the real problem is metabolic disease. And that's a whole range of diseases. I've only mentioned a couple.
So metabolic disease is a cascade where your metabolism, which is really the way we transform the food we eat and turn it into energy and nourishment for the body, goes awry, correct?
Correct. I mean, just think of your metabolic system as your cellular engine. It not only creates cells, but destroys cells. And it's vital to your health. So it's literally, this system is creating either healthy cells or, in some cases, mutant cells for your body. And there's certainly a connection between sugar and cancer and processed foods and cancer. And, you know, it kind of makes sense when you think about it. If we're feeding our cellular engine toxic food, it's naturally going to create some dysfunction.
So just for our listeners to understand, for those people who don't really understand what metabolic disease is, what are some of the manifestations of metabolic disease besides diabetes and obesity? We would include heart disease in there, correct?
Heart disease, cancer, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, strokes, heart attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, 75% of chronic disease is preventable and diet-related.
Yeah, and then we see all the more subtle types of diseases, which are endocrine disruption, thyroid, low thyroid fatigue, digestive issues, bowel disease, all these things that seem to manifest as well from a plethora of processed foods and sugars, right?
Yes. One of our partners is a site at UCSF here in San Francisco called sugarscience.org. They've logged in around 7,000 to 8,000 studies, and they can provide you kind of with the headlines of those studies that are tied to, you know, leading healthcare issues. I highly recommend that site at sugarscience.org, in addition to our own, which is responsiblefoods.org.
If you've just tuned in, we are speaking with Wolfram Alderson, who is the Chief Operating Officer of the Institute for Responsible Nutrition in San Francisco, and we're talking about sugar and processed food and its impact on our health. So I can only imagine, Wolfram, that our listeners out there who've been hearing a lot about sugar and how you have to clean up your diet, you know, they're saying, oh, yeah, I know this. And they're starting to glaze over because they've heard it a lot. And they know they ought to limit it. But it's really, really hard. So can you just talk about why it's so hard for people to cut out the high levels of sugar in diet and fat and salt and all those elements?
Well, first of all, it's not your fault. It's hard for everybody. These are food additives which are designed to be addictive. In fact, there's studies showing that sugar is, you know, if you give rats sugar and cocaine, they go for the sugar. So these are very addictive substances, and they're designed for us to be addicted. They know that these substances help sell food. So first of all, let yourself off the hook there. You know, we're part of a toxic food environment, and we're being constantly bombarded with sugar and other additives. There's a list in the U.S. called Generally Regarded as Safe. It's a list of chemicals and substances that are supposedly safe to add to our food supply, and there's now 10,000 of those.
10,000?
10,000 in that database, and most of them are chemical names that you can't even pronounce, let alone recognize as anything that has to do with food. So, you know, you have to let yourself off the hook there. One, I mentioned, if it has a label, it's a warning label. You know, look for simplicity of ingredients. Certainly look for sugar. Earlier in the broadcast, you mentioned the USDA guidelines had come out, and they're recommending no more than 10% of daily calories should come from added sugar. Unfortunately, the FDA is still pending a decision to put added sugar on all food labels, on the nutrition facts label. And so that's a next important step, because it's difficult to measure how much sugar is in a food product from an industrial source if it isn't on the label. And we can thank the sugar lobby for making sure that that's the one food additive that we don't get to see on the nutrition facts label. But you do see it on the ingredients, And so if you see sugar on the ingredients and then you look at the total sugar on the label, and the guideline 10% of daily calories is basically about 50 grams of sugar, or let's just say 12 teaspoons of sugar per day, which that's the upper limit. So for me, 12 teaspoons of sugar per day would destroy my health. I'm particularly sensitive to sugar and processed carbohydrates, but that's now considered to be the safe upper limit. And so if you start looking, and you have to learn a little math. I mean, you have to be able to convert grams to teaspoons, and basically just divide the grams by four, and you get the number of teaspoons. So that's one simple way. And again, just be aware when you buy anything in a package, there's a pretty good chance that it has sugar added. We don't really need to worry about, natural sources of sugar from fruit and things like that come with fiber and nutrients. We do need to worry about juice, which has been, fruit that's been blended up, and now the sugars are what they call free sugars. We've destroyed the mitigating element of the fiber, and so now the fructose is free to essentially bombard your liver, and that, again, that's kind of at the center of the whole problem.
So once we establish that, we want to eat more whole food, more real food, which is around the perimeter of the supermarket, when you shop in supermarkets, and you want to keep your consumption to under 50 grams or under 12 teaspoons, which also seems like a lot to me. What do you, at the Institute for Responsible Nutrition, how do you support people in kind of going detoxing or not going cold turkey or, breaking this addictive cycle? Because you're right, it's not their fault. It is an addiction. It happens. It's a physiological thing. It happens in your brain, your nervous system, all of that. So what are the steps people could take to really break that addiction?
Well, first of all, health is really a team sport. And it's really important, if you don't have support in your immediate family or friends around you, and the fact is, a lot of people around us in our lives are eating too much sugar, and there's constantly social pressures to have that piece of cake or have dessert after every meal. So this is a team sport. If you don't have that support right in your immediate circle, reach out. You can go online. You can go on the IRN website. We have something called the 10-Day Real Food Challenge. And the idea is, just try 10 days of real food, no added sugar. And we make that 10 days interesting. We provide tips and tricks and resources for each day of the challenge and inspirations and affirmations, things like that. And at the end of 10 days, it's remarkable, just in that short period of time, how much better people can feel. In fact, Dr. Lustig did a study at UCSF. It was called an isocaloric study with children. And isocaloric means that there was actually no change in calories. They only removed fructose from the diet. So it wasn't even a real food diet. It was what you call a SAD diet, standard American diet. But they took fructose out of the diet and for 10 days. And it was really remarkable to see what happened at the end of 10 days. There was a 29% reduction in liver fat in 10 days. Improved insulin sensitivity, lower fasting insulin, decreased fasting glucose, decreased LDL cholesterol. I mean, I could go on. There were many markers of metabolic improvement, and that was just in 10 days with a very limited improvement in the diet. So if you go to real food for 10 days, cut out the processed foods for 10 days, cut out the sugar, see what happens. Usually that's long enough to sort of get beyond the initial discomfort that, sort of the detox stage. We actually did this with MyFitnessPal and partnered with them, and 20,000 people signed up on the very first challenge that we co-hosted.
That's fantastic. What is MyFitnessPal?
MyFitnessPal is a really interesting application that allows you to track what you eat. It does track calories, but you get a very interesting picture of, you can get printouts of what your macronutrient ratios are, and it has a scanning function, so you can scan any product that has a label and instantly get the facts about what's in the food. It's crowdsourced, and there's 85 million members.
Wow.
Last time I checked, so it's a huge, community of folks that are supporting it. So I highly recommend it. I've used the app quite a bit myself.
And that's an app that you can download on your phone, your smartphone?
Yes, and it's free. You don't have to pay for the free version.
So that's fantastic. Now, when sweet is a really important flavor in just, it serves function in our lives. I mean, it's calming, it's nourishing, and it's in whole, real food. So when people are having those cravings for sugar, what do you recommend?
Well, I'll tell you what I do. I mean, I had to wean myself off sugar too, so I look for things that are naturally sweet. And what's interesting is when you get off of added sugar, the foods in your diet, the real foods, the flavors just pop out, and this natural sweetness in foods begins to really pop out as your sensitivity grows to natural sugars. So certainly, whole fresh fruit. Generally, stay away from the blenders just to avoid destroying the value of the soluble and insoluble fiber.
So you're saying not to put fruit in smoothies, or?
Generally not. I mean, you could say it's better than drinking a sugary beverage, but actually what you're doing is you're freeing up the sugar. So, example is, think about how many oranges that you could sit down and eat in one setting. Usually people will say one, maybe two, but there's four oranges in one small glass of orange juice. So you can down a lot of liquid sugar in a very short period of time by juicing and blending. So the best thing is to eat fruit whole. And then certainly there's dried fruit. There's I go for other replacements too that are not necessarily sweet. But I also had a bad, what I call a crunchy craving. And I think there's a lot of carbs that have that crunchy, salty attraction. So I went for pickles and I went for dried seaweed. And so actually, when you look around, there's a lot of natural, real food kind of substitutes for some of the processed foods that are really popular.
So you're thinking, so people really need to think about not only just the sweet, checking in with oneself and saying, oh, am I really having a sweet craving now, or am I wanting something crunchy? And I used to have, some kind of candy bar that was crunchy. Maybe I can get crunch from something else.
Right.
And also, I think the other marker might be, am I hungry, right? Because sometimes we go for sweet when we're hungry. Because it's easy, quick, boost me up.
Yeah, and there's a really interesting, practice around mindfulness and hunger. I've taken this course myself, and they break hunger down, in the American lexicon of food and hunger, we just say, I'm hungry or I'm hangry, But there's mouth hunger, there's nose hunger, there's brain hunger, there's stomach hunger. There's heart hunger, and I could describe what each of those are, but they, there's foods that you grew up with that maybe your mother made that you're attracted to, not necessarily because you like them, but just because they're comfort foods, or sometimes things smell good, but you're not really that hungry. You just walk by a donut shop. I've been off of donuts for a couple decades, but I have to admit, if I walk by a donut shop, that smells good. It's just vaporized sugar and processed carbohydrates.
Right.
And
so
oil.
there's hope. We can change. We can change our eating habits and our taste preferences and all of that. So that's good news. I wondered if you might just talk. Let me start that again. We know that the Institute for Responsible Nutrition has on it a lot of resources, the opportunity to participate in the Real Food Challenge with support from MyFitnessPal. Could you just let our listeners know a little bit more about what the Institute for Responsible Nutrition offers and how they could contact you?
Yes, so responsiblefoods.org is essentially a website that is one big toolbox, and we offer resources for individuals and families, for health professionals. We have all kinds of information about what's metabolic health, how you can improve your diet, facts, frequently asked questions. We feature great recipes and cooks, solutions in schools, kind of strategies or thinking for moms, dads, for kids. Then we provide a whole range of action steps. Once you sort of get your arms around your personal health. You know, people often get motivated to get involved in their local food system, and certainly the region you're in is very rich with, you know, folks working in the food movement and farmers markets and CSAs.
That's all we have time for today, but thank you. Those are great resources, and I hope that some of our listeners get out there and check out the responsiblefoods.org website. Wolfram Alderson, thank you so much for the great work you're doing and for being with us today on Health
Watch. Thank you. My pleasure. And health to everyone.
Thank you. You've been listening to Health Watch. I'm Ellen Goldsmith, your host, licensed acupuncturist.
Good morning. It is almost 11:30, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. Today, not today, coming up in a couple of weekends, the KCI Institute Vision Van is coming to the Clackamas Volunteers in Medicine Founders Clinic on Saturday, February 27th. Free vision screenings and glasses will be provided to Clackamas County low-income residents who do not have vision insurance, without access to health care. A limited number of appointments are available on Saturday, February 27th at the Founders Clinic in Oregon City. The services are for people needing glasses or who have health issues related to diabetes, macular degeneration, or glaucoma. Pre-registration is required. Call 503-722-4400 to schedule an appointment. And coming up next is Health and Healthcare Forum with Roberta Hall.